In the latter half of the 20th century, film criticism, of all things, was almost like a spectator's sport. You sided with one team or the other, rooting for your favorites. And you argued, just like the sports fans on WFAN, about who was better than whom and why. You can hold film critic Pauline Kael at least somewhat responsible for making movie criticism into a high-stakes game in that period. Kael was born in June 1919 on a chicken farm in Petaluma, California, and she made her name in New York in the 60s. And admire her or despise her, and that is a real question, her impact is remembered and to some degree still felt.
There's no such thing as a message or a statement in a movie. I mean, if it's any good, it really is expressing what some people involved feel about the material they're dealing with.
She was a film critic with a high degree of certainty, shall we say.
I mean, it's only in the films of Stanley Kramer that you get a statement or a message, and those are generally the bad films where the intentions stick out.
When Kael finally made it big at the New Yorker magazine, she was in her late 40s. Even before that, on radio in Berkeley and in numerous publications, she was using her high-energy, evocative writing style to influence a generation of younger critics, mostly male.
I was a graduate student in the film program at Stanford, a small documentary-oriented film program, and I sent her a few things that I had written.
New Yorker writer and critic David Denby wrote to her as a young man after reading with excitement her 1965 book, I Lost It at the Movies. And he heard back from the formidable Ms. Kael, which he found kind of astonishing.
That someone, you know, who is a nobody, in effect, or, you know, wrote on a small paper somewhere, would send her stuff and she'd respond.
Denby became a Kael follower, an acolyte, he admits, and later wrote about his experience as a Paulette, as he and the other inner circle writers became known. What did it mean to be a Paulette?
You would go to her apartment, which was then at 93rd and Central Park West, where she would write in pencil on unlined paper.
Denby recalls her round oak table with a Tiffany glass lamp overhead, in keeping with the decorating style of the day.
And you'd look out at the park and the conversation would fly like crazy, sometimes till 2 or 3 in the morning. So she was exhilarating to be around. She was fast and funny and erudite and bawdy, all of those things at once. I had never met an intellectual like that.
Kael had a way of taking the most revered films and making you feel guilty if you liked them. She called films like The Best Years of Our Lives and A Place in the Sun paralyzed, self-conscious imitations of European art. She seemed to frown on anything she felt was overblown. And she could be devastating in her dismissals. Clint Eastwood isn't offensive, she wrote in 1974. He isn't an actor.
I don't think it's nice, you laughing.
So one could hardly call him a bad actor. He'd have to do something before we could consider him bad at it. This, she felt, is what a critic should do.
She kept sticking pins into all of us and, you know, wake up, don't be such a stiff, don't be so stuffy. I mean, use more of your sensibility and your taste rather than your college education. Don't be afraid of low emotions. Don't be afraid of sensation.
She appeared unafraid of anything.
It was always funny if you sat with her at a screening.
Peter Rayner, now the film critic at the Christian Science Monitor, was also drawn into her circle.
And if there was something in the film that she didn't like, she would let out this big sigh, you know, if something was particularly awful, or just you just go, oh, so that everybody in the theater could hear it.
Hardly the model of the film critic mole, sitting quietly in the dark, taking notes in a reverential state. Ms. Kael used her position as well to change the minds of critics and the public, most notably with the film Bonnie and Clyde, savaged by the old school critics like Bosley Crowther, and famously embraced and raved about in a long piece by Kael, which changed the fate of that landmark movie. She opened the review with a question. How do you make a good movie in this country without being jumped on? Bonnie and Clyde is the most excitingly American movie since The Manchurian Candidate. She took her stand.
She had notorious feuds with a lot of critics of her generation and stature, such as Richard Schickel and famously Andy Sarris and others.
Especially in that memorable movie year, 1976.
There was the All the President's Men versus Taxi Driver fight in the National Society voting that year, and she was in the taxi driver camp, and Richard Schickel was all the president's men, and it got so heated that literally the fire alarm, the smoke alarm, went off in the room.
Yeah, the lines were very clearly drawn. I mean, there was a major feud between Saris and Cale, and, you know, I thought Saris was even ridiculous to worry about Cale because I had absolutely no respect or interest in her.
Amy Taubin, who wrote for the Village Voice back then and now writes for the magazine Art Forum, was not at all in the Cale circle, obviously. She has strong memories of the territory Miss Cale carved out for herself, not, in Taubin's view, with much depth.
She wrote to evoke the kind of movie that appealed to her. Kinetic, erotic, full of high melodrama. And she basically was an impressionist. And she also believed that you either got it the first time or you didn't. I mean, she wrote on first viewings.
Which brings us back to sports. She rarely resorted to replay, instant or otherwise.
I do know people who say they never would have gotten really involved with movies if not for Cale. If not for the way she allowed those feelings that you have, she validated that you did have an emotional response to this, that you had feelings of being in love or in hate with a movie. And she did that.
Love, hate. There have always been critics who love things and hate things. But for Cale, that was an end in itself. No philosophy, no guiding principles that anyone could ever figure out. Just which movies she loved and which movies she didn't. Art is the greatest game, she wrote, the supreme entertainment, because you discover the game as you play it. Pauline Cale, whether you were her fan or not, played it in her own opinionated way. And we're still thinking it over. It's Fishko Files. I'm Sarah Fishko.